Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
TheChairShot.com.
TheChairShot.com. Always.
Always.
Use your head.
You are now listening to Chair Shot Radio. Always use your head.
What's up with you, man?
Just chilling over here, man. What's up with you guys?
Can't complain.
About the same.
Yeah, the weather's pretty shitty here. It's raining all day, so.
Where are you at exactly, you know, over there on the East Coast?
I'm right outside of Orlando.
Oh, getting a nice spell of rain, huh?
Yeah, I'll take this over snow though any day. So
I was gonna tell you, man. This morning I woke up to a nice snow-covered driveway. A little bit of, you know, just a little dusting, but yeah, like 19 degrees. Ridiculous.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
I used to live in New York, so I know all about it.
Oh God! Thank God you're not there right now, man. With all those damn storms they've been getting. Holy cow!
Yeah, you ain't lying.
Nah, I feel you. I grew up in Cleveland, so yeah, I don't do that snow anymore either, man. I'm too light in the ass and too old to have to deal with that.
Yeah, it got to a point where it's fun to look at, but it's not fun to drive in or be in or anything like that. So
yeah,
you know,
I kind of wanted to at least start talking about, with, you know, the family that you're part of here, and growing up, I mean, you basically kind of had to be in the business, right? I mean, you didn't really have a choice, you know, growing up that way, right?
How exactly does that work, man? Like, is it you get out the womb and then by day two they just throw you in a ring and you have at it?
Yeah, pretty much. That's pretty accurate. Yeah, man. Like, being exposed to it as a kid, and, you know, like, I always think that I was pretty lucky growing up, because, you know, it's one thing watching it on TV and stuff like that, but it's another thing, like, being able to travel, like, with my uncle at the time, for example. I want to say my first memories where I can start remembering stuff was, like, when like, the first Raws, Monday Night Raws, happened, and my uncle was, if you remember, he was a manager there for the Head Shrinkers.
Yes.
And I've always been very close to my uncle, so whatever he was doing, I would try to do and tag along with him. And I want to say I was around three, four, five years old at this point. And, you know, he's taking me, you know, into the back, and, you know, I got pictures with all these guys to this day, you know, guys like Shawn Michaels and Mr. Perfect and Razor Ramon, you know, some of the guys that ended up, you know, becoming some of the best. So, you know, when you're exposed to it as a kid that early, and, you know, you're seeing so much stuff, and then eventually my uncle, you know, when he departed from the WWE, he opened up shop with his training school and eventually his own company as well. So I got to see that side of it too. You know, not only did I get to go on the road with him WWE wise, but now I was able to be in a ring pretty much anytime I wanted, you know, anytime I was rolling with him. So, you know, all that stuff building up as a kid, you know, I just became more and more in love with it. So, you know, when I was of age, you know, there was no doubt that, you know, that's what I was going to keep doing.
And that's kind of how, that's kind of how you rolled into it with, I mean, your uncle trained you as well in the business when you started wrestling. So that's kind of, you just rolled right in and kept following him and right with his training academy, huh?
Yeah, you know, that was pretty normal for me at the time, because I would, you know, like, you had to be 14 years old to legally start, you know, doing it for real, I guess. But, you know, obviously as a kid, you know, I was in there jumping off the top rope when I was, I don't know, 6, 7 years old, you know, all the way up. But then 14 years old hit and, you know, you start taking a little bit more serious. That's when I actually started learning how to bump and run the ropes and really learn my basics and stuff like that. 14 years old, and I was a pretty skinny kid growing up, you know. I still consider myself kind of, you know, small now, especially in a big man sport like wrestling. But, you know, back then I was even, you know, skinnier and smaller, so every bump I remember just killed me. And I remember thinking, like, damn, you know, is my body ever going to get used to this stuff, man? Because, you know, it could be intimidating at first. And that's me saying that even being in the ring all my life, you know, at this point. But you know, you start getting older and, you know, the bumps become the norm, and you just keep going. And at the time, this was, you know, this all went down in Pennsylvania. So I spent about 4 years training from 14 to 18. And then when I was 18, I was able to, you know, work anywhere. And that's when, yeah, that's when I really got started.
Your uncle is Afa of the Wild Samoans. Is that correct?
Yeah, you got it.
Okay. I apologize, DP. Go ahead.
Oh,
man.
No, that's fine. I was just going to make a joke about that. Talk about being a small kid in a big man sport. It's just, you're a small kid in a big family too. I mean, you got to be like the smallest one of that group, probably. I mean, you got some big boys in that family.
Yeah, that's something I've always had to deal with. You know, no matter what diets I've been on and all this bulking stuff. You know, I've only gotten to a certain point, but you know, it's almost like my size ended up helping me in the end. Because I was considered a cruiserweight, you know, coming into this whole world of the WWE, and I was, you know, it's almost like it was meant to be, you know.
So growing up in the world famous Samoan dynasty, it's quite frankly, it's the most well known and accomplished family in the entire genre of pro wrestling. I gotta imagine something like that can be a gift, but it also kind of I imagine it could be a gift and a curse at the same time.
Yeah, because, you know, when you look at the family, man, it's like, who hasn't reached a certain, you know, amount of success? You know, obviously you can look at The Rock as being the biggest one, because, you know, not only did he, you know, do his thing in the ring, but now he's popping movies out left and right, and, you know, he's on a whole nother level. But, you know, you got my cousins Roman and the Usos holding it down now. It's always been, for me, it's always been motivating to see. There's always been somebody from the family representing the company at all times, you know, whether it's Rikishi, you know, like Rikishi and Samu, you know, the head shrinkers. And, you know, and then, you got Umaga, you know what I mean? And, of course, Yokozuna. You know, Matt Rosie, rest in peace to him. You know, Afa Jr., my cousin Manu, who was in the whole legacy thing with Randy Orton. There's been eras from the Samoan dynasty for, you know, since the beginning of time now. And, you know, I always wanted to be a part of that. It was always very motivating for me to see. So at the end of the day, you can look at the pressure, you know, because you want to be successful like these guys. But for me, you know, the pressure I put on myself is all self-made. You know, I got my own goals, you know, that I try to reach. So if anything, it's a motivating thing to, you know, want to join them and you know, do a lot of cool things like they were able to do.
Now, speaking of your uncle Afa, and Sean, if you don't want to answer this, we'll just edit it out. But is it true that he served as Vince's bodyguard back in the day when he was out clubbing?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
I'm not sure. I mean, he's told me a lot of stories, but if I ever heard that one, I would have no problem, you know, telling it. But no, that's the first I heard of that, actually.
That'd be very interesting.
Fair enough.
I would take my uncle as a bodyguard if I'm going out, you know, especially back in the day.
Oh yeah,
Sean, I would take any of you all as my bodyguard if I'm going out right now, including your uncle right now. So
shit, you know, Uncle Alpha and Sika, man, with some savages back in the day, you know. You know, that was a time when the believability factor was there, and you know, people didn't really know how wrestling worked back then, so that just played in their, you know, in their hand, you know, so well, and they were able to, you know, create, you know, some really good stuff back in the day because of that.
So we mentioned a little bit ago, like how like being in that family can be a blessing and a curse. You know, what do you feel about the business today as well? You know, being that is the whole social media thing and the fact that more people can understand the business and know what's going on backstage, is that, you know, and you being around the business for so long, you've seen it all the way up until now. Do you feel like this is more of a blessing or more of a curse that more fans and more people can know what's going on with you guys?
Oh man, I guess it's, you know, I would like to pick a side, but I guess it's a little bit of both, but I think it's harder on the performers now because, you know, you want, as a performer, you want people to buy into everything you're doing and you know, and just relate to the person that you're trying to portray. And, you know, sometimes, you know, things are so exposed that it's hard to even do that. You know, you're seeing now a lot of real life, you know, whether it's like real life drama, you know, going on, you can see a storyline being made of that now. And, you know, you can see storylines being formed on Twitter. It's a whole different world now, but I think it's a little bit harder on the performer, but it's also, it forces you to stay creative. It forces you to stay relevant and put out something that's, you know, that people can relate to and get behind. You know, as you guys probably know, you know, wrestling is kind of in the middle of a boom period right now. So it actually is a really good time to be a wrestler and a fan. You know, I don't know how today's numbers relate to the past numbers. I'm sure, you know, a lot more people overall were watching wrestling back then. But I think wrestling's in good hands, man. And, you know, there's, over the years, especially the last 4 or 5 years, you know, there's been so much complaining going on. And I don't think you can really complain anymore with the level of talent that the guys and girls are working at, and the amount of signings that, you know, the WWE is giving you. So I think it's a pretty cool time to be a wrestler. I guess it's got its, you know, pros and cons as far as that goes.
Yeah, it's definitely probably a great time just to be able to get your name out there a lot easier than it was back in the day. And, you know, there, like you said, not only WWE, but there's so many other brands and all the independent shows that are out there. There's some amazing talent everywhere. And it's just, you can go, you know, I know for us, like right in my backyard, there's just a ton of different promotions that have some great talent that we've gone and seen. And, you know, it's just amazing the amount of options that are out there right now for wrestlers like yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. Without a doubt. And that's even internationally, pretty much all across the board, you know, and that's where, you know, we mentioned social media, you know, that's where, you know, things like streaming devices, you know, it's perfect for wrestling. You know, it's a way to get out there in ways that you never have before. So I think all that is obviously good stuff.
I agree totally, Sean. And I always like to compare pro wrestling to hip hop, where you can make the argument it's not what it used to be. And yeah, there's a lot of bad out there, but there's so much good out there. And like you just said, through the streaming services, and there's so many outlets for us to get access to so many different things, man. I mean, like, for example, in the, you know, in the 80s and the 90s, if you wanted to watch a New Japan match, you had to get down with the underground tape trade circuit, man. And that was like pulling teeth trying to find the New Japan tapes. And now you just pay a couple bucks a month and you have access to everything.
Yeah, it's unreal. I got like a million WWE DVDs that I've bought, you know, across, you know, throughout the years, and that they're all just sitting there now because I just got to put on my Xbox and put on the network, and everything I've ever bought is pretty much is pretty much all there now. So it's cool for everybody. Like, it's cool for the fans because, you know, there's a lot of nostalgia with wrestling. You know, people want to constantly relive the old times in wrestling. I think more than like maybe any other field or sport or anything. It's crazy. But it's also good for the wrestlers. You know, if you're a big studier like me of, you know, studying the greats and how they do it, you know, how they did it. And, you know, I mean, that's all easy access now. You know, I can look up anybody I want and, you know, just do my thing and do my studying, you know. It's great for everybody.
You know, you made a really good point, actually, that more people go back and watch old wrestling events than they do other sporting events. It just made me think, like, oh, I've went back and watched WrestleMania 4, you know, 100 times. How many times have I gone back to watch the 1996 NBA Finals and Michael Jordan beating the Phoenix Suns? Never. Yeah.
Well, DP, I have to interrupt you there, bro, because being a Clevelander, I do occasionally go back and watch Game 7 of the 2016 NBA Finals. I'm not even going to lie to you about that.
Well, that's because you guys haven't been champions for how long?
Exactly, and we probably won't be again for my lifetime. So, you know, got to celebrate the accomplishment, baby.
At least you guys ain't a Knicks fan, so I choose not to comment on this matter. Ooh. You know?
Hey, you guys made a couple NBA finals when Michael Jordan decided to, you know, quit for 2 years.
Yeah, it's kind of a dumpster fire right now, though, man. Y'all need to find some way to get Dolan to sell the team. I don't know how. Maybe you send your uncle up to Madison Square Garden, man, and they can work something out.
They need something, man. It's New York, man. Give them something good, man. It's New York, you know, not something embarrassing.
Yeah, they've been too bad for too long. That's one of those teams that needs to turn it around quick.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about your WXW, where you kind of got your start. And
back in Pennsylvania, when I was living up there. I never lived in Pennsylvania. I've always lived in Staten Island, New York. For those listening that don't really know that, and I just basically commuted to Pennsylvania a lot to do my training, and that's where the majority of my shows were. So, you know, I was 18, and I started working, but it was only for a couple of years until my uncle decided to close up shop, or at least on his end, and he was planning to retire and move down to Florida, which was going to be a big change because, you know, I really leaned on him a lot, especially at that time. As far as my training goes, and you know, I was very comfortable. He put me in comfortable scenarios, working the shows until I got comfortable. So it really sucked that he was going to be gone. So he ended up moving, and just like a lot of people say, they're going to retire and then they don't, or they're going to give something up and they don't. It was all but probably a month until somebody got in his ear down here and he opened up shop. He opened up WXW down here, the school the school and also the company running shows now. So
that's the Wild Samoan cool Wrestling Academy.
They were actually, was that?
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, they were actually doing some pretty cool stuff down here. They were working with FCW, doing some run-ins back and forth. FCW had ran in a building where WXW was running at the time, and it ended up turning into a shoot. And there was like a little, you know, there was a little beef there. And, you know, WXW was looking like a cool place to be. And I'm over here in New York, and, you know, this is when Alpha Jr. Manu, he first got back on the indies after he left the WWE. So me and him started tag teaming a lot. And that was cool because, you know, I was really going on the road with, you know, a lot of cool places he was going to, you know, too at the time. you know, I was getting to see a lot of things, getting some good experience, but I don't know, something in me just like was still missing my uncle, and I just wanted to keep learning from him. I felt like there was, you know, some unfinished business there, you know. So I just decided to make that move to Florida and follow him down. You know, he had a school, he had a company, you know, I was good. So I've been doing that off and on now since 2010. And, you know, it's the number one place where I've been able to learn and grow over the years, for sure. The thing I really enjoy about my uncle's company is the emphasis that he puts on things like cutting promos every week and things like running angles and storylines. You know, a lot of indies, because of the talent they use or whatever, and because, it, you know, people are always on different schedules. A lot of indies, you know, it's basically people are just throwing matches together. You know, maybe matches people want to see, but it's matches thrown together. My uncle was very big on storylines and feuds and bringing things back. You know, it's almost like WXW. I always consider it like a small territory down here. You know, we've had our up and down draws, but it's like a territory, and it's a really good breeding ground for the students. You know, the students that join the Wild Samoan Training Center, they put in their few months, they graduate, now they have a company immediately to you know, to keep working for, and you know, to gain that experience in front of the crowd now. So you know, that's what I've been doing. And you know, since I've been training so long with my uncle at this point, he actually made me a trainer a few years ago. So I'm one of the head trainers there now. And, you know, I'm just giving back to you know, at this point to the younger guys. You know, a couple of days a week, I'll go down to the training center and, you know, getting in there with everybody. And it keeps me sharp. And, you know, I'm also, you know, doing something good and helping them out. So, you know, the Wild Samoan Training Center, you know, that's why I just felt like I needed to keep training with my uncle. And that's ultimately, you know, what I did. And, you know, as I'm working for WXW over the years, I started having tryouts. You know, I started going to the WWE, you know, frequently, and, you know, built myself up enough to, you know, finally reach an opportunity, a really good opportunity, with the Cruiserweight Classic. And you know, that's all because of the experience that, you know, that I've gained through WXW and the Wild Samoan Training Center.
So what is it still in the business that you personally want to accomplish? What are some of your goals?
Well, as far as the WWE goes, you know, I haven't even started there. You know, the Cruiserweight Classic was a great first match to have with the company. You know, I've had tryouts now since 2011, and you know, I was never really thrown in a scenario, you know, where I had to, you know, work with maybe a 30-second or, you know, a minute long gig, you know, working somebody like that. You know, the Cruiserweight Classic was my first official match with them, and you know, I couldn't have been happier with that. You know, I've gotten to do a lot of, you know, some cool things in NXT and 205 ever since then. And I'm definitely going to keep the ball rolling with that. You know, you definitely haven't seen the last of me as far as the WWE goes. So, that's, you know, that's obviously the main goal that we have in this business. You know, that's where you want to be. It's, you know, some people would say Japan. Some people actually, you know, do it as a hobby, but if, you know, for the most part, you know, you want to be in the WWE. But I do have other goals as far as, you know, if that wasn't the case, you know, I would love to perform, in Japan, in some aspect, it's just because it's been such an influence on my style, growing up. You know, I have a little bit of a Taekwondo karate background, so that's where my love for all the strikes, you know, came through. But it's also of all the, you know, the influence of the Japanese wrestling I've watched over the years. To be able to wrestle in Japan one day, you know, that would be pretty cool. I've already got to tangle with a couple of some of the best Japanese wrestlers of all time, such as Ibushi and Kenta. So, I would love to, experience some of that, more.
It's funny you say that, Sean, because that's when I first got introduced to you. Was you had a damn fine match with Ibushi in the Cruiserweight Classic. So, fans, if you haven't seen it, go out of your way to watch it, man. Really.
Yeah, that was absolutely an amazing match. I actually wanted to bring that up. You got an opportunity to get in there with Kota Ibushi, and what was that experience like? Just being able to get in the ring for the first time in a WWE setting and be able to put on a match like that in front of that crowd.
Moments that you dream about. It was my first time where they gave me the ball and said, this is what's going on. During those moments, you just have to seize it. You have to be prepared. I didn't even know I was going to wrestle Kota Ibushi till probably 2 days before. So it's not a whole lot of time to get, prepared for one of the best in the world, but, I was at the Cruiserweight Classic for a reason too, and because I was one of 32 of the best in the world, of the best cruiserweights. So I was definitely up for the task. But at the same time, this is my first introduction. During the week, I'm having really, really cool interactions with Triple H. I'm having interactions with, all of their coaches, like Matt Bloom, of course, William Regal. If I can backtrack, actually, William Regal was probably the reason why I had this opportunity to be in the Cruiserweight Classic. Because he's been so instrumental with the tryout process over the years. He's helped me grow just as much as anybody during my whole tryout process and, leading me to the Classic. So I really think that he thought I was going to be good for this opportunity. So I wanted to make him proud, too. I wanted to make my uncle proud, who also helped me, receive this opportunity. But at the end of the day, when you're in the ring, you got to perform, and that's you and only you. You can have the best recommendations in the world, but you got to deliver. And I think that night we did. The reaction was pretty cool afterwards. I just remember it feeling surreal at the time. Ibushi, just a phenomenal talent, man. You can see he's still going strong, and I was kind of unaware that he had, a pretty serious neck surgery, somewhat before the Classic and things like that. But he was really great to work with. I couldn't ask for anything more, and I put over that whole first match thing because I just think it's a really cool way to have a first match in the company. We were the main event of the first episode, of the Cruiserweight Classic. And the Classic, proved to be so successful that they announced, the entire division was going to be coming to Raw, soon after. So that was pretty cool, too. just nothing but good times and good memories from the Cruiserweight Classic.
That certainly spawned off, all these other tournaments that they started going with the UK and everything. And, it all really stemmed from that Cruiserweight tournament, which was absolutely amazing. You guys put on just an incredible show. And, it's awesome to see you continue, you get some matches in NXT, like you said, in 205 Live. I'm sure it helps that they're not too far away, being in Orlando there, that you can, make the short trip to get to the NXT Center, huh?
Yeah, that's been pretty beneficial. You know, there's been times where I've actually gotten called like the day of, you know, to make an opportunity, which I did. And also, I've had a lot of my opponent's selection there has been really cool because, you know, these are some of the best in the world, you know, guys like Bobby Roode, Drew McIntyre, Hideo Itami, of course. I got in there with Patrick Clark. And then also, on, you know, on 205 Live with guys like Tajiri and, Brian Kendrick. Wrestling these guys only brings me up and it only elevates me. And, you know, I learn something and I take something from every single match that I have with those guys. It's just been really cool to not only have matches in the WWE, but have matches against, you know, some of these guys that I named. So that's the cool part too.
It seems like Orlando right now, at least in this country, is the mecca of pro wrestling. So you have Orlando, and then when you stop doing it, you retire and move to Arizona. That seems like the pro wrestler trajectory in the United States right now.
Right.
So, Orlando,
you know, you had TNA here for a while, for the longest time. And then, NXT kind of just took over. You know, and now you got some companies coming up here and there. But yeah, you know, for a while, you know, I a lot of talent was moving here. But you know, sometimes it's not always the smart way to go. You know, wherever you're at, just do your thing there, and keep working, and you'll probably have that opportunity anyways. You know, sometimes you come down to Florida, it's not always what people think. But for the fans, it's been pretty cool, you know, like wrestling in the Full Sail University atmosphere. That's always pretty cool.
Yeah, sometimes those smaller venues seem to bring out just more excitement from the crowd and more from, you know, the superstars as well. Sometimes when you see these big arenas, sometimes the events just don't pan out to be that great. But when you get in that smaller venue, I don't know, just the atmosphere sometimes is just more electric.
Yeah. Yeah, without a doubt.
So what
I think
go ahead.
No, I just think the Full Sail was the perfect setting for the Classic at the time. You know, and you can, you know, the reactions were, you know, were clear as day. We're on 205, you know, sometimes because of the timing and, you know, SmackDown being before, you know, you don't get those same reactions. So that's pretty important. You know, how things are seen on the network is pretty important. You know, sometimes you can watch a great match, but if it's almost like when you're sitting at home, you know, you almost want the crowd to be into it too, because that makes you into it. You know, if they're just sitting on their hands and you're just seeing a great match, it might not be as exciting as it could be. You know what I'm saying?
That's funny that you brought that up, man, because I was down in New Orleans for the WrestleMania festivities this past week, and I was there at the actual event. And typically what my lady and do, what we do is we go to the event and then we fly back that Monday or Tuesday, and then we hang out and we watch it on television just to kind of get the television perspective as opposed to the live perspective. And your cousin, by the way, the main event of the show, him versus Brock Lesnar, that was a damn good match, man. They beat the holy hell out of each other. But in the arena, it was very hard to get into because the fans, I don't know what the fans were on. I don't know if they were tired or whatever the case was. But watching it on television, it kind of goes to what you were saying. It was a damn fine match. But because the crowd wasn't into it, there was something missing. Like, it was palatable. It took something away from what was going on in there.
Yeah, yeah. No, you're exactly right. It's kind of a weird thing, you know, because it's, for it to be a really good match, it's almost like the crowd has to be there. It's in certain aspects. And, you know, sometimes it could also be the reverse way, I heard, where it sounds like it's nothing on TV, but it's really loud in there live. So it's interesting.
That's how it was in New Orleans, because I know I was texting with these guys back and forth in the Chair Shot family, and they were saying how the crowd came across as dead on television. But no, it was lively in the building. We kind of petered out there somewhere around like hour 13 of the show, which is understandable. but the crowd was lively, and even during the main event, the crowd was live, but they just totally weren't paying attention to the match, which it frustrated me because I'm a fan of both guys, and I knew it was going to be a good match going in, and I kind of felt bad for the performers too, because as a matter of fact, Sean, talk a little bit about this, man, because I think that the crowd. Like you said, the crowd has to be invested in the match, and it's cool for the crowd to voice their opinion and to be vocal. But at a certain point in time, it sometimes seems like the crowd is trying to become the stars of the show, and that takes away from the whole experience instead of just sitting back and watching the matches and being entertained.
Yeah, it's that's just something that's developed, I guess, over the last few months, few years, or whatever. I don't know. It's just something that you got to deal with, I guess. You know, you can't turn around as a performer and shit on the fans now, because that's not good business to say that. You know what I mean? But at the same time, as a performer, you're busting ass in there. You're putting your life on the line. You know, at least have the decency to you know, show some respect or chant something that relates to the match. You know. Of course you want that as a performer, but, you know, the fans have, you know, it is what it is now. It's no different than, you know, doing that in sports or at a concert or something like that. I guess wrestling, it's a little bit more, you know, glorified or whatever. And they had, you know, they got a wide range of chants there. So, I guess it's just something you got to deal with ultimately. You know, of course you want people to be invested in what you're doing and only that, but you know, that's sometimes it's not the case anymore. And it could be, and you've seen on Raw and stuff, it could be really frustrating. I remember Cesaro got so pissed off. He went in the crowd and destroyed that beach ball. You guys remember that?
Yep. Oh yeah.
Yes, I do. And I don't know where this beach ball shit came from anyway, you know, man. Cause they were doing that in New Orleans as well. And, you know, I hate to keep beating a dead horse, but it legitimately pissed me off, man. Because, again, these guys, it's the main event of the biggest show of the year. They're going out there busting their asses. Your cousin gets busted open. Like, they're doing everything they can to possibly entertain you. And as a crowd, you don't even want to give the match an opportunity. Before the match even started, you had already decided in your heads that you just weren't here for it. And that it frustrated me. And I don't have a dog in the fight. And it pissed me off just as a fan.
Yeah. I hear you. It's just one of those things, I guess, there's no way around it. There's always going to be that select few that, you know, want to get over themselves. You know what I mean?
So since we are on the heels of WrestleMania weekend, besides Roman Reigns and the Usos there, you know, what did you have a favorite part of the weekend at all that you enjoyed the most?
I actually wasn't there this week, this time around. But as far as, the weekend goes, I still saw all three events as far as, the Hall of Fame, NXT, and WrestleMania went. I thought first and foremost, NXT was pretty damn good as it usually is. Especially the main event, man, Gargano and Ciampa. Big shout out to those guys. I first met them at the Cruiserweight Classic, which was actually the first time that they, you know, wrestled in NXT together. A lot of people forget about that one. Of course, the storylines were different back then and stuff. But anyway, I thought that was great drama, just an all around great match. And then from WrestleMania, you know, definitely Charlotte and Asuka was great. I really enjoyed that. I thought WrestleMania overall was great. You know, almost every match was pretty intriguing, and it was something to get into. And that's all you could ask for. You know, it was another long show. You know, I was there last year in Orlando, so, you know, just sitting there, even us sitting there, you know, sometimes it could seem like forever, man. But it's WrestleMania, and there's probably no going back now. You know, you can expect WrestleMania to probably be this long every year, but as long as they produce like they did this time, you know, it'll be fine. What was the other match I really enjoyed? I thought Rana did her thing after all the, you know, the criticism throughout the weeks and stuff. I also really liked, you know, anytime you can see The Undertaker come back in and provide us with another special WrestleMania moment and entrance and all that good stuff. I think that's always it's always a good thing, especially for the WrestleMania brand. And definitely the whole Daniel Bryan, match. Even though he was out of it, you know, just seeing him make a comeback, man, and do his thing, just like we all love him and know him to do. It's just really cool to see, you know, somebody that was, you know, told no and forced to retire and, you know, just keep fighting and, you know, just to find another way. I thought that whole story was pretty cool. And it always makes you feel good just seeing him wrestle in there. And just a quick side thing with him. I met him for the first time at the Cruiserweight Classic. He was the commentator, him and Mauro. So big shout out to him. Got to talk to him, you know, here and there during that whole week of the Classic. And he was just a really, really, really fun and really cool to talk to. So I'm happy for him.
It really is a very inspiring story, just the whole Daniel Bryan story. And he really does seem like a genuinely decent dude, and you root for people like that in all walks of life.
Yeah, without a doubt. He definitely deserved it. He definitely deserved to, you know, to be back. And, you know, it's hard, man. You know, I can only imagine, you know, because, you know, wrestling is also my life too. You know, it's the only thing I know. It's the only thing I wanted to really be involved in. You know, I've had a couple of interests along the way, but nothing ever compared to wrestling. So, you know, unfortunately, the injury side of things, it's, you know, it's never, nothing is ever a guarantee. You're not as safe as if you were an actor or something like that. You know, injuries can literally derail people and cheat, you know, cheat people out of greatness. So to see him overcome that, you know, and you know, come back and produce more greatness, that's a good thing.
Sean, as a basically, like you said yourself, you've been doing this your entire life. At this point in the game, do you ever wake up and are not sore? Like, is there just something constantly hurting and you just kind of, obviously I know your bloodlines, so you're tough as a $2 steak, shout out to Jim Ross, but do you ever wake up where there's no pain whatsoever and, you know, you can just kind of trollop through your day?
I mean, there's pain, but it's, you know, it's not like, you know, I haven't been doing this yet on a basis of like some of the guys out there, like on the road, like, you know, the guys, let's say you're on Raw, so you have to, you know, fly out Thursday and wrestle Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then again Monday. You know, I haven't experienced a schedule like that yet, so I'm sure my soreness days, you know, I haven't even seen the really severe ones yet. You know, it's wrestling, man, so there's definitely a certain level of soreness. Everybody's body's different. Everybody absorbs things different. I'm pretty active as far as going to the gym every day. Usually I don't even feel, you know, my day doesn't even feel normal unless I can get in there, and I try to get in there as early as I can. You know, lots of stretching helps me out. It helps a lot of other guys out, I know. You know, it's just very physical, man. So there's always a certain level that's going to be there, but everybody's different.
Well,
What is it about that stretching? I know the stretching, and I know a lot of the guys do yoga and stuff like that, but I've heard that from athletes in other disciplines as well. The most famous example I can think of is Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. He was a real big proponent of stretching, and he played for, about 20, 25 years.
Yeah, I feel it's necessary for the muscles. You know, the more active you are, the more you should stretch. Just recently over the last couple of years, I've been big on the foam roller too. I get on that thing and I hear crack, 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 all over the place, but, it's all good stuff. You know, I kind of picked that up, believe it or not, before wrestling. That was, I used to study, Taekwondo martial arts. I think I joined that when I was like 6 or 7 years old. And that's when I really learned, believe it or not, the importance of athleticism. And back then I was able to do like full splits and stuff like that. And, the karate instructors were pretty big on always keeping us loose and always being big on stretching. So I think it's just something that I've just carried over from there.
Well, I know we're definitely not rooting for you to be sore, but we certainly hope to see you more active and, hopefully get back in WWE and are a little more full time so we can see you more often and, you can experience that wonderful soreness that goes along with everybody else.
No, he's a badass, man. I'm not buying that shit for 1 minute. This man is a legitimate badass, because if that was you or that was me, DP, we'd be whining and crying like a little bitch every day of our lives. I'm convinced of it. Don't let that man fool you, man. He's just a badass.
I couldn't survive a 60-minute boot camp at the gym, so there's no way I could survive a day in wrestling, I'll tell you that.
Dude, I was cooped up on an hour and 30-minute flight and was crying like a little bitch, so I'm not...
So let's talk a little bit about what you got coming up, which is actually on my birthday, just so you know, April 29th.
Oh, nice.
You got the Samoan Dynasty family reunion coming up in Southern California.
Yeah, I'm really excited about this one. This is pretty much Rikishi and Reno the Black Pearl. This is their doing. They are Knox Pro down there in Southern California. And this is big. The event is called Wrestle Fair. I believe it might be an annual event at this point. But it's going to be the first time where, with the exception of my uncle, he can't make it this year. It's pretty much the entire Samoan dynasty, including Sika, Samu, Rikishi, of course, Afa Jr., you got Lance in there, you got Jacob Fatu, the list goes on.
Did
and,
I see Rocky Johnson on that as well?
Rocky, yep, Soul Man, Rocky Johnson.
Okay.
We're all going to be in there, and it's the first time of, numbers-wise, where we've all been able to do that, scheduling-wise and stuff like that. So it's also my first time in the area. I've been to California before, but never Southern Cal, so really looking forward to that. That's on April 29th, by the way. You can go to Knox Pro, Instagram, Twitter, for all the ticket information, or you can just go to, to all of my stuff. I'm constantly sharing and retweeting everything about the event. It's going to be big, and it's going to be April 29th. So look out for that. That's Southern California.
Get your stuff out there too. Where can they find you if they're looking for it?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Savatkick, and you can type in Sean Maluta if you want to hit me up on Facebook. I'm also the Wild Samoan Training Center. Type in wswrestlingschool.com. If you ever have any aspirations to enter the crazy world of wrestling, My Uncle Afa has a pretty damn good resume and is one of the best in the world at what he does. And maybe you can see me there helping out too. So that's the Wild Samoan Training Center. We have locations right outside of Orlando in a town called Mineola, Florida. And we also, Samu is open up shop over there in Allentown, Pennsylvania. And you can also catch me at WXW April 21st. Hopefully they're not going to be mad at me because I'm not technically advertised yet. But April 21st, it's going down, and that's going to be myself, Afa Jr. We're actually tag teaming now. And, you know, we're going to get down, and we're the next tag team representing the Samoan dynasty. So that's pretty nice. Cool. We're doing that. And that's also in Mineola, Florida. Hit up WXW Wrestling on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook for all that info.
Before you get away from the Wrestle Fair, there's one other thing I did want to ask about, because it does say that it's from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m.? Is that right? It's a full day?
Yeah.
That just for the entire fair? What all goes on for a full day with you guys?
Man, it's going to be a party, man. What you talking about?
No, it's gonna nice. Be,
I can't it's imagine that show. Party. Oh, my God.
I know, man. It's a lot of Samoans in one area. Right. It might get dangerous. But it's also going to be a good time, too. That's guaranteed. Yeah, it's supposed to be an all-day event. I believe it's outside, and hopefully the weather's nice. And you know, there's going to be a lot of autographs. I think there's a lot of games and things like that, and rides maybe surrounding the area. It's going to be all new to me too, but you know, I just pretty much know all the wrestling stuff going down there, but. I will definitely be there bright and early, 9 a.m., so you can come catch me over there. And like I said, man, it's going to be a great time.
Nice. So when do we get to see Afa Jr. and Sean Maluda versus the Usos in a ridiculous tag team match?
Ooh, how man. Does that happen? Ooh, you're coming out hot already with that.
How do we make that happen?
Hey, maybe one day, man. You know, shout out to the Usos, man. They're really doing the thing right now. You know, ever since they moved to SmackDown and you know, really got their shine on with the tag titles, they're really repping the family pretty hard and pretty good right now. And you know, but me and Afa, you know, we're coming too, and we have a lot to prove. And I'm looking forward to tag teaming with him because I mentioned before we had that little run in 2008, 2009. And me and him, we have a similar mindset, and we have some pretty good chemistry in the ring. So we're looking to go full board and, you know, really surprise a lot of people with this thing.
Yeah, definitely don't count yourself out there, because you had a killer match with in the Cruiserweight Classic, and you know, everything I've seen from you has been amazing. So I'm looking forward to, if you guys stay as a tag team or however that's going to work out, you guys you're in for some bigger and better things coming forward too. So I'm certainly looking forward to it.
I appreciate it, man. Appreciate you guys.
And Sean, we appreciate you, brother. And before we let you go, again, April 29th, you better have your face in the place. But I was doing my crackpot research, which basically means just Twitter stalking you. And one comment that you made a few days ago, man, I just wanted to second that. Whomever has that secret Wu-Tang Clan album, please, please, pretty please with Sugar on top, please release it.
We need that, man. We need that. Come on, man. Hook us up. You know,
please, whoever
it's
has
not
it,
gonna,
please.
It's not going to do any good in one person's possession, you know. We need
no,
that.
No.
And it was and it was recorded back in the day, man. Come on.
Yeah,
somebody has to put that out.
Please do, because I was mad when the asshole got it, man, because he was just a smarmy melon farmer, man. And now he's going to jail. And I know, you know, he had to auction off some of his assets and whatnot. So. Please, please, please do us all a favor, please.
Please, please.
You heard
the man.
Hook
your boys up. Come on. Hook a noose up.
Nice. All right, Sean, we'll let you get going. But thank you so much for the time, for one. It was absolutely amazing.
Hey, anytime, man. Appreciate you guys having me on again. You guys take care.
TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.